Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Mitt Romney and Barack Obama have a few things in common. They're both running for president. They both think their wives have better images than they do.
We also both have degrees from Harvard. I have one. He has two. What a snob.
President Obama at the White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday night, the annual opportunity for a president of the United States to do some stand-up comedy at the expense of the media people who cover him, or his colleagues, or his rival for his office.
Recently, his campaign criticized me for slow-jamming the news with Jimmy Fallon. In fact, I understand Governor Romney was so incensed, he asked his staff if he could get some equal time on the Merv Griffin show.
Meanwhile, on the serious side, the president was threatening to veto a bill passed by the House on Friday to keep student loan rates steady, those Stafford loans in particular, by taking money from preventive health care. We will talk about the serious and the less so now, first with Josh Mitchell, correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, who has written about the politics and economics of student loans. Hi, Josh. Welcome to WNYC.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you reported recently on student loan debt topping $1 trillion nationally for the first time and possibly threatening other sectors of the economy. Student debt also now equals more than our national credit card debt, which is staggering if true, and more than our national auto loan debt. Can you put this $1 trillion figure into context for us?
Yeah, sure. I think it's important to know that the big issue here is that there's a weak labor market. So what you have is a lot of people who have gone to school in the past few years as the labor market has been weak. They haven't been able to get good jobs. A lot of them have gone to school, but they're having to take out bigger loans to pay for school because tuitions have risen. And so they're coming out with these higher debt loads, and yet they're not able to find well-paying jobs in many cases. And so there's this concern that if college graduates are increasingly and if they're coming out of college and they have these higher debt loads, but they're unable to keep up with their payments, that's going to damage their credit. That's going to prevent them from saving for a down payment for a house, and that could affect, you know, things like the housing sector down the road. So there's this broader concern of just what the debt burden is on young Americans these days.
Another stat, I think the Fed released this one, that more student debt holders are already in forbearance, which means your payments have stalled because you don't have money, but the interest keeps piling up. How much is that on the rise?
That's on the rise. The New York Fed is trying to figure out right now just how much that's on the rise. The problem is that a lot of these statistics have been reported inconsistently over the years. So I think right now people are trying to just grasp how big the problem is. I think one thing to know, the one statistic that sticks out for me, is that if you look over the past 10 years, what the average student debt load has done, it's gone up about 25% for the average student going to college over the past 25 years, and that's adjusted for inflation. But if you look at what their income growth is, the incomes of those between 25 and 34 has gone down 15%. So we had an interesting graphic in the paper this weekend that showed that you have higher debt loads but lower incomes. And so what does that mean? Does that mean that more younger Americans are taking longer to buy a home or get married? Those are things that the New York Fed and others are looking at right now.
Redistribution of wealth, redistribution of debt. Why is that happening? Is it a matter of politics, decisions made in Washington?
Are you referring to just the rise in college costs?
Well, those stats that you were just citing, more debt, less income for 25 to 34s.
Yeah, I think that reflects underlying shifts in the U.S. economy. We've become more productive, and so therefore, I think workers have had less leverage and are going for bigger income increases. And so those are underlying shifts in the economy. And there's also a question of what is causing college costs to go up. Colleges will tell you that a lot of it has to do with a decline in state funding. And so when states cut their budgets, you know, colleges have to respond by raising tuitions on students. So there's been this underlying shift over the past 10 to 20 years of college costs being distributed evenly among taxpayers to now going to the specific students. You also, you know, there's also this question of, yes, the government has expanded its aid and its loan programs, and is that in a way boosting college costs, much like how the government was a factor in the rise in housing costs over the years? And so that's one thing that's being debated right now.
Josh Mitchell reporting on student loans and student debt for The Wall Street Journal. Let's also bring in Karen Tumulty, Washington Post national political correspondent. Hi, Karen.
Hi, it's great to be here.
And let's stay on the politics. You heard Josh's last answer. Have politicians put students more in debt over the last generation?
Well, there is one particular issue that has put this, I think, front and center, which is that the rate on student loans is set to double on July 1st. And President Obama spent most of last week making a tour of college campuses and arguing that, you know, the Republicans were going to add $1,000 a year to the cost of repaying these loans. Now, the Republicans have struck back. They say that they, too, are absolutely committed to this rate not doubling as it's scheduled to do on July 1st, but that the argument is over how you are going to pay for that. So John Boehner went on the Speaker of the House and former chairman of the House Education Committee went on the Sunday shows over the weekend to say this was just a fake fight. But it is a very divisive issue right now. On top of that, I think that the cost of college has become an issue in a way that I've certainly never seen it before. For instance, in Texas, one of Rick Perry's most sort of controversial programs were controversial initiatives was where he took on the entire state higher education establishment to argue that they should be out there providing a four-year college degree at the Texas flagship universities for $10,000.
But was he cutting state aid at the same time? Because that's something that we've seen in New York State. The SUNY system with pressure to raise tuitions, pressure to allow each campus to set its own tuition rates, which would generally mean higher tuitions at the best SUNY schools, while the state cuts its funding.
That is absolutely true, but there is an argument going on, especially in conservative circles, that the colleges themselves are not doing their jobs as efficiently as they could. And what you hear a lot is, you know, arguments that, you know, professors should be spending more time in the classroom teaching, that, you know, that essentially universities should be working on more of a business model.
Listeners, let's hear from some of you, especially with student loan debt. You can be the former student yourself. You can be the parents. Maybe the debt is yours. How much debt are you in? How tough a decision was it to get into that much debt? How is it affecting your economic choices? We heard the implications for a housing recovery. If young people, especially with these prices down and perhaps an ability to buy starter homes and starter apartments, maybe you can't do it now because you're already in too much debt just from college. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Do you blame the economy? Do you blame politics for not offering you other options? And what about the point that Karen was just making and Josh was making a related one a minute ago? Do you think that the school that you attended could have been run more efficiently to keep tuition down? 212-433-WNYC for people with student loans. 212-433-9692 as we talk with Josh Mitchell, who has been reporting on student debt for The Wall Street Journal, and Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. And to stay on the politics for a minute, the parties seem to agree now that they should take $6 billion from other federal spending to keep Stafford loan rates from doubling from 3.4 to 6.8%. But here's House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi speaking Friday, taking credit for the Democrats.
The point is that on the floor of this House at this time, on this day, the Republicans have folded because the president made the issue too hot to handle. That is why the bill is coming to the floor today. It has to come up soon because by July, the interest rates would double. But the reason that it's happening in the same week as the Violence Against Women Act passed in the Senate is because they folded, they felt the heat of the president going out there and saying, we cannot allow 3.4 to go to 6.8.
So they passed the bill, but President Obama wants to pay for it by reducing oil industry subsidies. The House version, the Republican version, would pay for it by raiding a preventive health care fund in the health reform law. Now, here's Pelosi again saying the Republicans are playing with fire politically by pitting student loans and women's health against each other.
It's like they've rubbed two stones together, and they're playing with fire. They ought not to do it. This prevention saves lives, saves money, and there certainly are plenty other places to go in the budget. For example, there are tax breaks for the wealthiest people in America, as we do in our bill there to eliminate some of the subsidies that they have for big oil in their budget and in their priority system.
So, Karen Tumulty, what's the real story here? What fund is this that the House bill taps?
It is a part of the president's new health care law, and that's one reason that the Republicans are anxious to go after this.
Is it a women's preventive health fund per se, the way the Dems have been spinning it?
My understanding is that it is a larger fund of which women's preventive care is part of. Mm-hmm. But again, all these issues are getting kind of all wound into one because this is an election year. And I think one very strong, if you want to look at this in the, sort of crassest political terms, one of the reasons President Obama was elected 4 years ago was young voters. And, they have been much less enthusiastic about this election. So I think this issue is also a way to remind young people that, yes, this election is about your concerns, too, because it's always difficult to motivate young people to actually come out and vote.
But why go there if you're John Boehner in the House Republicans? Didn't they just get a big enough black eye over women's health from the Rick Santorum candidacy?
Yeah, I think they didn't see this one coming. Then the White House last week just did a full court press, and they were very much, I think, off balance.
The Republicans say that this fund or similar funds have been raided before. So the Obama administration is making a political issue out of something that they themselves have previously considered routine. Is that accurate or inaccurate?
Boy, these are the kinds of things that just sound very different in an election year. Mm. And I think that Washington has gotten to the point where nothing's routine anymore. What is routine now in Washington is gridlock and not getting anything done.
And Josh Mitchell, what are the Stafford loans, by the way? Which students get those? And I guess we should point out, in case we're making people nervous out there, that it isn't people with current existing Stafford loans that they would see their rates go up in the middle of their loan terms. This would be for future Stafford loans if the Congress doesn't act, correct?
Yes, right. I think there's been a lot of confusion about like what ultimately the impact will be if the rates go up or not. And so right now you see both parties in like this chess match. I think the Republicans know that health care is unpopular, so they're targeting that. I think the Democrats are really trying to show that they're trying to fight on behalf of young Americans. But the actual impact is if you are a college student and you're going to take out a loan called a Stafford loan, that's the most popular program that the government offers. Basically, there's a portion of that program that if you qualify based on needs, so if a college says, okay, you have a financial need to get better terms, you can get up to $5,500 a year from this program. And so that $5,500, you would be paying an interest rate of 3.4% as opposed to 6.8% over the life of that loan. Now, let's say that those rates rise this summer if Congress doesn't act and that rate does rise. First of all, that would affect about one-third of undergraduate students. And the most that that would affect for this year would be up to $5,500 in new loans that they take out. And a lot of them take out less. So the average is about in the $3,000 range. And so the other thing to know is that it's not like this summer you're going to see these payments that they're going to have to start paying and they're going to be these, you know, high payments. This isn't like an immediate tax increase. What will happen is that a lot of these students, 6 months after they graduate, that's when their payments start to kick in, and that's when they would start to see higher payments on that loan than if the rate were to stay the same. And the White House says that that's the equivalent of about $1,000 over the lifetime of that, you know, $5,500 loan.
We'll continue in a minute with Josh Mitchell from The Wall Street Journal and Karen Tumulty from The Washington Post and start to take your calls. Many students and parents calling in to talk about the role of student debt in your life and with suggestions on what should be done about it. Stay with us. Oh, and we'll hear another Obama moment from the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Stay tuned.
And just to set the record straight, I really do enjoy attending these dinners. In fact, I had a lot more material prepared, but I have to get the Secret Service home in time for their new curfew. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
President Obama almost delivering that laugh line without stumbling at the White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday night. Jimmy Fallon was funnier than the president, but the president was pretty funny. So we've played three of those already this morning. But on the serious side, we're talking about student loan debt now surpassing credit card debt in America in total. Isn't that unbelievable? And auto loan debt in total in America topping $1 trillion total dollars. We've been hearing some of the stats from our guests, Josh Mitchell from The Wall Street Journal and Karen Tumulty from The Washington Post, on how students, former students, 25 to 34-year-old grads, have more debt and less income than their counterparts a generation ago. And we're talking about the politics of this, too, as some of it is coming to a head between Democrats and Republicans right now and in this election year. And let's take a phone call. Linda in West Caldwell, you're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Yes, I'm an older person. I have a daughter who just started college this year, and I'm paying for her college. I also went back to school in the last 5 years and got a second degree because I felt I needed it. So I have Stafford loans. I also have what are called direct loans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm underemployed. I should say I'm not totally unemployed. But I wanted to mention that there are a lot of things that I think could be done. I know they want to put a cap on the tuition that the universities charge, but what I found that when I was a student recently was that there every semester I was charged a facilities fee, and I'm in New Jersey, so this was a state university in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
The facilities fee was extremely high. And I believe that it was going towards building new buildings. They had started building. They built a couple new buildings in the, for the sciences. And unfortunately, I did not benefit in any way from those facilities fees because I was a commuting student, and all of my classes were in one really run-down building that I can tell you I'm in the architectural field, and that building should have been condemned. I mean, it was not up to code at all.
So do you think the facilities fee was unnecessary? Colleges would argue that with today's technology and various specializations, they need to keep building.
Well, I absolutely am in favor of building new buildings. My husband builds schools, actually.
Uh-huh.
And I'm totally in favor of that, but I think that the state should be giving the universities more support for those types of things, because that's a lot of money, and the only place they can get it is through raising the tuition and or charging these facilities fees.
Linda, thank you very much for your call. And Josh Mitchell, I think that brings me back to a point that you made earlier, which is that conservatives argue that student aid and subsidized loans, and I guess this would include state aid to colleges, make college more expensive because colleges factor in those subsidies when setting the price. They know how much people can pay out of pocket, and they just add the subsidy value on top of that. Do they have a point, those who make this argument?
Well, there's two sides to that argument, so I can't personally come down on one of those sides, but that's definitely something that a lot of critics will say, is that if the colleges know that the aid is out there, they're going to take advantage of it. It's funny, when I talked to a lot of states this year just about what they were doing with their budgets, the first thing, a lot of the times, the first things that the governors would tell me is that we're going to cut funding for colleges. Why should we give them money if they keep on raising their prices? They need to be more disciplined with their costs. But then the colleges turn around and say, that's why we're raising our prices, because you keep on cutting funding for us. So it's definitely an open question out there.
Beth, well, and Karen, go ahead.
Well, in terms of facilities, too, you know, these colleges are competing among themselves for the best and brightest students. And so, you know, and I know Newt Gingrich on the campaign trail this year was complaining that, you know, they have their colleges that have, you know, lobster night Wednesdays in the dorms and that sort of thing, too, that, they, you know, the question becomes which of these facilities are necessary and which are, you know, athletic facilities, which are sort of frivolous.
Beth in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Beth.
Hi. Hi. I think I'm in a similar situation to the previous caller in that I went back to school for an MFA at Columbia, mm-hmm. and at the time I was so worried about money, I didn't know how I was going to pay for it. And then Columbia gave me so much in student loans, way more than I asked for. And being a kind of artsy, not really that, I wasn't paying attention to what the debt would mean. And I thought, what's the difference between $20,000 and $50,000?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So I graduated with $52,000 in student loans in 95.
Wow.
And this was at a time when Columbia, but I read afterwards that Columbia had been getting kickbacks. The rate, the interest rate was 9% then. So, and I had a
9%.
Teaching job when I graduated. And after the 6 months of grace period were up, I went and got a corporate job. And so I paid my student loans when I could, for some years, doubling up my payments. So I was trying to get rid of it. And then the past 3 years, I've been underemployed for some time, not employed at all, and really worried about just eating. Now, 17 years afterwards, I owe $67,000.
Oh, my, Beth. So you graduated 17 years ago with $50,000 in debt.
52.
Yeah. And now, even after you've already paid back, yeah, that's why, yeah. It's at 9%, you still owe more. You owe $67,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. I talked to Sally Mae, who now has my loan, and they offered me this something that seems totally ridiculous, but they said, well, we'll give you an income-adjusted rate, and you can just pay that a month. And I said, fine, but the interest is still accruing at 9%. And they said, oh, yeah, you know, so I won't even cover the interest.
How do you think this has affected your participation in other parts of the economy?
Oh, well, you know, I would say that the rest of my life will be spent basically paying off debt rather than participating in other ways. Mm.
If you had to do it all over again, what would you do differently?
Well, I can't say that I would return the degree, but a couple of things that could be done. I don't know how many people have student loans at such a high interest rate. That was sort of unusual. But there ought to be ways, just like you can refinance a mortgage, to refinance your student debt at more reasonable rates. I mean, we're worried about student loans going up to 6% now.
Right.
I changed my career. You know, so now I'm totally given up on the arts, and I do corporate stuff.
Yeah. So you went. It's funny because you went for an MFA, I presume, because you loved working in the arts.
Yeah.
But you went to an Ivy League school and you got into all these debts, and that has wound up forcing you away from the arts into the corporate world.
Yeah.
So Josh, first of all, any other advice that you could think of from your covering of the student debt world for Beth in particular? And then put Beth into some context for us and tell us if she's an outlier or if you think there are a lot of people out there like her.
I'm so glad Beth called in, because I think she hit upon one of the biggest problems these days, is that It has become an increasingly important investment to go to college, because when you take a look at the unemployment rate for college graduates versus those who don't go to college, there's an increasing gap. Same thing with income growth. So it is important to go to college, but it's also become riskier in that it's more expensive, and so you're taking out bigger loans oftentimes, but yet if you don't do your research to know what field you're going into, if you don't know, you know, what the success rate of people who go to that particular school that you're going to is, you could really end up taking out a lot of money for a college institution that might not get you the job that you need, or you might go into a field that just might not pay off in the long run. So it's just so important for students to really do research before they take out these big loans. And that's one thing that the government, the Obama administration, is trying to do. They're trying to put in place programs that will really inform students of the background of the institution they're going to, you know, what the exact terms are of the loans that they take out. But that's just the key. A lot of these students don't really realize what the burden is that they're that they're taking on.
Yep. Can I just I just want to quibble with that a little bit to say that if in fact you know, I knew that the arts, no one goes into the arts because they think they're going to get rich. But I think that if people were to choose their degrees and choose what they study solely on the basis of what they could make a lot of money in, we'd end up with a lot more white-collar crime and a lot more people getting MBAs. That's one point. And the other point is,
and a culturally debased society.
Yes.
But still, you got to make, people have to make affordable choices.
Well, you know, but then I would also say that, I can't remember my second point, but I
That's right. Hang on. Karen Tumulty, you wanted to get in on this?
Well, I was just saying, even beyond that, you know, you talk to recent graduates of medical school who come out very often burdened with six-figure debts, who will then be looking at their specialty. And, you know, there's going to be a huge demand over the coming decades for primary care doctors. But, you know, a lot of these students will say, I'm picking my specialty according, you know, these specialties pay so much more. And yet it somehow seems like we're shortchanging our society and what its needs are going to be.
I totally agree. And also, I would just like to say about the Columbia degree, and I have a master's in music from Yale, too, so I have totally impractical degrees. Mm-hmm. But my first corporate job I ever got, I was working for the chairman of, I don't want to say which company, but he would go around saying, oh, yeah, she's really smart. She has an MBA in music from Yale. And so there is something for the brand name, and certainly the corporate jobs I got, the fact that my degree was in the arts, they seem to overlook when they saw the name.
That's interesting. Well, you should go into the music business. I don't know. Make the next iPod or something. Beth, thank you very much. I know, easier said than done. thank you very much for calling, an important call. As we continue on Student Loan Debt in America with Josh Mitchell from The Wall Street Journal, The Politics of It from Karen Tumulty from The Washington Post, and Danny in Massapequa. You're on WNYC. Hi, Danny.
Hey, good morning. My heart goes out to that woman. And you know what? The bottom line is she got a degree in music and a degree in art. And when she was 18 years old, if her parents took her down to McDonald's, got her a job making burgers, and took all that money that she spent on education and put it in a 401k, she'd be a millionaire today, unfortunately. But, I mean, that's you make decisions in life. You know, an economist once said, don't confuse a hobby with your ability to make a living out of it. And that's what a lot of kids do. I have a son who's done with college, and what he did, which a lot of kids don't seem to be willing to do these days, is that he went to community college for 2 years and managed to work 50 hours a week in a local supermarket and I paid for the community college, and then he finished up at CW Post, which is not inexpensive. Mm-hmm. He paid for half. I paid for half. He paid for his half out of his earnings. Because remember, college is a 12-hour-a-week operation. You go to four classes, that's 12 hours a week. That leaves you about 110 hours a week of your life. So he worked 40 hours a week. Graduated with a degree in a medical field, paid off his end of the student loan within a year and a half. He got a full time job at one hospital and a part time job at another hospital. And now, at the age of 25 years old, he's buying a house, because hard work will get you through a lot of difficulties in this life and proper decisions. And now, that's what I don't see with a lot of kids. I have two kids that are still in school, and some of the things you say make perfect sense. For instance, my son's going into his third year at a private school where he plays football. And he's on education scholarship, not athletic scholarship. Mm-hmm. And they, because I have two kids now in school, they both qualify for the Pell Grant of $5,000. Well, this year, all of a sudden, my financial aid package came in the mail, and they lowered both kids down by $3,000. They're only getting $2,500. So when I notified the student, the financial services at my son's school, guess what? They upped his scholarship. So now, if you, in a way, I feel that if you took away Pell Grants and you eliminated it, the schools would be forced to charge less. Because I agree with you completely. If you go on a school directory on your internet, you would be amazed how many employees they have working. And every time I turn on, I listen every day, we have another professor who had time to write a book. I have a 40-hour week job. You do. I barely have time to take my kid to his travel baseball game. These professors, the administrators, there's too many. They get paid too much, and they need to follow a corporate model as opposed to like this education. I work in a school district. There's a million employees.
Danny, you put really good points on the table. Let me get some responses. First, I'm really glad you brought up the question of work, Josh, because we talk about loans as the alternative to paying out of pocket if you can't pay out of pocket. But what about working your way through school? One of his kids did it.
Sure. No, I think that's a very good point. And you will see lenders and the government and others say, you know, it's good to get ahead of these payments. You know, you have the option in many cases to put off these payments for a while, but if you can get ahead, get ahead. And that's what I think the most important thing is just knowing what you're getting yourself into. And so, you know, the previous caller pointed out that, you know, if you're going into a background like art, that's just not going to pay off. But as Beth pointed out, you know, some people, that's what they want to do for a living. But, you know, if you look at what the earnings is going to be for that field, maybe you choose to go to a cheaper school than a more pricier one that has the bigger name. You know, so I think it's just a key to know what you're getting yourself into.
Of course, Karen, you're in school. He said you're in school for 12 hours, and that leaves 110 hours in the week. That may be the number of hours you're in class. Students still have to do their studying and do their prep for tests and a lot of papers and stuff like that.
And absolutely. And you look at some of the fields that we really need people in this country. We need top-notch engineers. We need top-notch scientists. So, you know, what the time you spend in the classroom is just the beginning.
And he brought up, and another caller brought up, the amount of time that teachers spend teaching, college professors spend teaching. And, of course, we all want to dig in and say, oh, the professor should be teaching more and doing research less. But that goes to a fundamental tension in the mission and missions of universities in America. Yes, they are to teach, but they are also to do research. And a lot of the people, Karen, who would be calling for more aid for students as opposed to student loans would also probably be saying more aid for basic research to universities, because that's where our basic R&D comes from and our basic knowledge base.
And another thing is that a lot of times the most intense courses are these very small seminars. So a professor is teaching 10 students instead of 250. But like I said, these colleges are competitive businesses, and they are out there trying to compete for faculty, including Nobel Prize winners. And, you know, these are often will come with a lot of strings attached in terms of how much time the Nobel Prize winner is spending in the classroom versus furthering that Nobel Prize winning research.
We're almost out of time. Very briefly, Josh, you reported on Friday in the journal that lawmakers are rethinking bankruptcy law options for student loan debt as these graduate burdens have grown by about 25% in the last decade. Very briefly, where does bankruptcy come in?
Well, okay, so the thing to understand is that the proposal in Congress had only applied to private debt, and right now that's such a small segment of the market. So I think it's definitely going to be an issue looked at, but it's going to have to be fine tuned. I mean, if you make it easier for students to shed student debt, that's going to cause a lot of these lenders to increase their rates to account for the increased risk of them losing that debt, and so therefore it could actually make college more expensive. So it's a proposal to certainly look at, but it might have to be fine tuned.
And, Karen, where does the politics go next? They seem to be in gridlock over how to pay to keep the Stafford loans at 3.4% for the new borrowers? Is it going to come out of the Obama Health Law's Preventive Health Fund, or is it going to come out of oil subsidies, as the Democrats want? How are they going to resolve this one?
Well, and the Democrats in the Senate want it to come out of ending a tax shelter for some small business owners. Huh. I have no idea, but I guarantee you this problem is now so front and center, it's going to get fixed.
One correction. Though President Obama appeared on Slow Jam in the News with Jimmy Fallon and referred to it in one of the clips we played, it was, of course, Jimmy Kimmel who did the routine at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And I said Fallon because I had Fallon on the brain earlier. So not to slight the funny Mr. Kimmel with the wrong name. All right. Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Josh Mitchell, who's been reporting on student loans and student debt for The Wall Street Journal. Thank you very much for coming on today for this very important conversation.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, good news for home buying in New York. Believe it or not, it is up in New York City's lower and middle income neighborhoods, according to a new report. We'll speak to one of the report's authors.